Matthew chapter 9, one of my favorite passages. I just want to leave you with a quick thought tonight. You know, just something that hopefully will be an encouragement to you. You're familiar with the passage. I mean, this is probably not a missions conference or a missions week that this passage isn't touched on. But verse 35 says, "And Jesus went about all the cities and the villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people." Verse 35 says kind of what I like to sum it up by saying Jesus never preached with his hands in his pockets. You know, he always preached and taught, but he loved people and he loved with more than just words. You know, he healed the lepers even knowing that 9 weren't going to come back. He worked and fed people that he knew were going to be denying, were going to be walking away from. But he did more than just say, and I believe there's so much more that we can say about that. But verse 36, "And when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion." We could talk a lot about the compassion of Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus Christ, if you go to Luke 19, cried over Jerusalem. And we could remember that he cried when he saw, the quantity of the people, when he saw the crowd, when he saw the amount. And you see that multiple times when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion. He also was moved when he saw their condition. He describes the people as hungered. He describes the people as blind. He describes the people as sheep without shepherds that are astray. I mean, there's so many different descriptions that Jesus gives about the people. Kind of makes you think back to Isaiah chapter 1 when God describes Israel as one great sore from the head all the way down. They weren't one sore physically. We know it's a spiritual application. It's a spiritual picture that they're giving us there. But the need of the people is there. So he was broken when he saw the crowd. He was compassionate when he saw their condition. And then he talks about their condemnation, speaking specifically in Luke 19 of what would be the destruction of Jerusalem. He said, if you only knew what was coming. You know, when the Romans came and finally conquered, and if you never studied that part of the story, when Romans came and destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, it was a horrible story. I mean, they say that it got so bad that there was actually people inside the siege within Jerusalem that started chewing on cloth and leather to be able to survive. They said there was people that were actually selling their children to be able to, and we see stories like that in the Old Testament, but that happened there 30, 40 years after the life and ministry of Jesus Christ. And Jesus, knowing what was coming, he's weeping over Jerusalem. Well, much worse than a siege of a city, we have, you know, the eternal condemnation that people face. You know, do we have the compassion of Christ to be able to look at people, see the truth? The song that one of the sisters sang right before I preached, you know, do we see them as Christ sees them? Do we love them enough to be able to reach them? Do we see the reality of what is going on around our world? You know, right now, and there's so many different illustrations we can go with this, folks, but on our southern border, I was just down there in August. And I was there with my grandmother. She passed away. Got to be there an hour before she passed. Got to hold her hand, sing, and pray with a little bit. She recognized me, praise the Lord. And then she went on to be with the Lord. And I was able to help out for a little bit. It's one of those moments where I think it was right coming off the field for that. And Tierce and I flew in. But when I was there that week, they were giving out the numbers that night. That was August. And they were giving off the numbers as to all the illegals that had come across in the month of July. And right there in the county where my dad and my mom have a little trailer in Texas, they were counting 38,000 people registered just in the county of Hidalgo that had come across and had been registered. When you start doing the math of how many counties are across the country line of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California, it is amazing the amount of people that have been coming across. And politically, you and I can sit and argue about it, and we can say it's not right. And as a citizen, I don't believe it's right. We got a guy, pastor from Venezuela. He's been to church with us for 3 years, didn't tell me he was leaving. I don't think he wanted my opinion. But all of a sudden, I get a phone call, and he says, "Pastor, I'm in Guadalajara, Mexico." And I says, "What?" He says, "Yeah, I left my wife working a job cleaning somebody's house. She'll be okay for a while. I sold my car for $5,000, paid $2,000 for a plane ticket to be able to get into Mexico, and part of that was to pay off the immigration officer so they'd look the other way. The other $3,000 I'm giving to the coyote, and the cartel is getting me across the border. I'll be across in a few days." 2 weeks later, he calls me from Arizona at a flower shop. He's got a green card, a license, the anklets off, and he's got a job paying $14 an hour. And he's been in the country less than a month. I was like, wow, that is so wrong. I'm glad you're doing okay, but that's not right. You know, as a citizen, politically, we said, that is not right. Hey, whether we agree with it politically or not, you know the hundreds of thousands of people from the world that have come just across the southern border in the last 12 months? As Christians, we need to get past the politics of it, and we need to realize that hundreds and hundreds of thousands have come and are still coming. I asked him, is it just Venezolanos? He said, oh, no. He said, the Haitians are put in a different room. The women and the kids are put in a separate room. He says, I was in a room with 100 guys. He said, out of 100 guys, he said, there was people from every country that I knew existed. And I said, really? And of course, he didn't know all that many countries, but he said, there was Arabians. He said, there was Japanese. There was Chinese. He said there was people from Guatemala, from Salvador, from Mexico, from Venezuela, from Colombia. He said there was guys from Aruba. He said there was guys from the Caribbean. He said there was Europeans. He says, and we were all going across with the same idea. Again, whether politically we agree with that or not, there's refuge cities in this country where hundreds of thousands of people have been collected right now as we speak. I saw a report coming across in October, when I came in October, Pastor, and it was more based out of the Southern Baptist Convention, but I thought it caught my eye, because they were saying, they were talking about these refuge cities that are being set up across the U.S. to be able to receive these people. And there's specific cities where they're going by the thousands and thousands. And the report was saying that the Jehovah Witness and the Mormons already have people on the ground. They're already setting up camp churches at these sites to reach these people. People that are there giving English classes, people that are there setting up food shelters, helping them find a house for rent, helping them work out the whole phone situation, and witnessing to them from the religion's point of view. And the article was saying, we have yet to hear of a Christian denomination that has put action behind this need. I say this, and sometimes I say it, and my wife and my dad and my father-in-law, I say, oh, don't say it that way, but if you're willing to give me $100 to go reach a Venezolano for Christ in Aruba, but you're not willing to reach the Venezolano illegal that's across the aisle at Walmart, then you might as well keep your money. I know that sounds rough. But folks, the reality is, in so many cases as Americans, we are not willing to reach across the aisle and win people for Christ. I love the flag. I do. I love the U.S. I've never been here too long. I love what this country represents. I love what it's meant to me and to my family. I got a son who wants to be a soldier. I don't know if he'll ever get there. If he does, he'll be a Rambo, I'm sure. You know, Judah's just kind of wild. But, you know, I have no problem with him becoming a soldier. I love this country. But, folks, we got to look past our flag. We got to look past our nationality. We got to look past the comfort of what we think is right. And we got to somehow get to the compassion that Christ had. Anyway, that's not what I was going to get to, but I kind of got sidetracked. Verse 37, you know, when it comes to missions, what is the problem really about missions? You know, is it lack of money? I don't believe so. In fact, I mean, some of y'all might hang me for saying this, but I believe sometimes we got too much money in missions. I'm sorry. Sometimes I believe we got too much money in missions. It's making missionaries be on the deputation trail too long, on the furlough trail too long. It's making us live higher on the field than we should, and it's taken away so many aspects of faith. It's making us depend and have too many nets to fall back on. Now, I know we all know missionaries that could use more money, but the sad truth is we have such a habit of focusing on the finances. I'll go if the money's there. I'll move if the money's there. And yes, let's count the cost. Let's be wise. But folks, it's not about the money. If God wants us there, God will provide. If God wants it done, I believe he will get it done. It's not about the finances. It's not about there being a lack of a need. Jesus talks about two things here in verse 37 and 36, 38. Then saith he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. He mentions two things. We need laborers, and we need more prayer. Let's start with prayer real quick. You know, how much do we generally pray when it comes to missions, when it comes to souls? I was at a church this morning where they announced they were going to have a fasting time. And I told Pastor, I said, it's the first time I've been in a Baptist church that talks about having a fasting day in a long time. We've pretty much thrown fasting out the window. We don't teach on it. We don't practice it. We kind of think that's one of those Pentecostal type things that other groups do. It's very much in the scriptures. It's the last time we fasted. You know, the average Baptist church, according to Numbers, prays 5 minutes per service. 5 minutes. That includes the initial prayer, the offertory prayer, the closing prayer. Time it. And if we ever pray anymore, it's because the pastor asked that one deacon to pray. And everybody knows who that one guy is. Like, oh, pastor, why did you ask him to pray? You know, there's always that one or two guys, you know, that really have a way of drawing it out. And we get so worn out and so tired. The prayer, the service that's less attended within the congregation is always a prayer service. And yet God said, my house shall be known as a house of prayer. Everywhere I go in the U.S., ever since I've been a kid, I've heard people say the U.S. needs an awakening. Our churches need revival. And yet, we're not willing to budge our clocks, and we're not willing to budge our knees. And I have yet to see a revival on the pages of history that came about without a bunch of praying and a bunch of preaching. If we truly want the Lord to work, if we truly want to reach the 70-plus countries where nobody's there, if we truly want young people to surrender, if we truly want our children to break their heart and to do something for the Lord, for the Lord to break their heart, we're going to have to pray more. But then laborers. When the Lord said, the labor is great, it's plenteous, but the workers are, or the harvest is great, but the laborers are few. And I got to studying on this a little bit one time, not too long ago, and I came across three simple thoughts. What happens when you have a lot to do and you have few people doing it? First place, the few that are working get worn out mighty quick. You ever met any tired pastors? Any worn out missionaries? Any servants of the Lord that are just about so tired they just want to give up? You know, it happens everywhere we look. Because we have this mentality of, well, they're the called, they're the elected, they're the ones that are paid to do the job there, and we've created such a division. So when you have a lot of harvest and you have few workers, first place, the few that are working get worn out. Secondly, what does get done gets done poorly sometimes. And that's not a reflection on the few that are working. It's just you can't. Ladies, have you ever been in the kitchen and you've had to do the dessert and you've had to do the main dish and you've had to make the tea and you've had to clean the kitchen and you've had to set the table? What happens? Something gets burnt. Something comes out raw. Something happens. Something gets broke. Why? Because you can't do it all. You're doing the work of six ladies and you're by yourself in the kitchen. And it's not that you're doing things wrong. It's just you can't do it all. And I see so many ministries where we're trying to do what we were called to do. We can't do it by ourselves. We need people. And there's a third thing. If you have a field of strawberries that needs 10 people to pick it in 10 days, and you got one person to do it, what's going to happen with some of those strawberries? You're going to spoil some. Now, I know we're talking about souls and not strawberries. But the honest truth is, I can't get past Ezekiel and Jeremiah. And I can't forget the watchman, the watchtower. And one of my favorite passages when preaching on missions, I just can't get past the idea that, yeah, when people are condemned, when people are lost, it's their own sin. It's their own fault. They didn't believe, yes. But the watchman walks away with blood on his hands when he was supposed to speak out, and he did not. One way or another, when a heart, when a life, when a family, when a marriage, when a young person goes to waste, yes, it's because of their own sin, but there's also a sense of responsibility for those of us that should do something about it and don't. The harvest is great. I just saw a pastor from Washington State. They just took a mission trip, 3-week mission trip to Senegal. And they had something like 60 people get saved, Pastor. And they did some things that I've never seen done on a mission trip. One of the things they did is, as soon as somebody got saved, they asked them, now who can you tell about what you just did? Instead of saying, well, you need to come to church and we're going to give you a Bible, and after you've gone through a discipleship course, maybe you should go tell your family about it a few months down the road. No, right now, you just got saved on the street, you just made a decision, who can you go read this tract to? Who can we go and talk to? And they were talking about the last week, they had something like 30, 40 people showing up to the services, coming in hand by the people they had seen get saved on the street. And they were just doing things different. They were bringing it down to a level that so few times we actually see. And one of the things that they said when they left is they started ministries, per se, in three different towns. And they said, there's already a group of 15, 20 people in each of those places that we left that have already made a decision, that have said, my house is here, we're available. The missionary they went to visit's already got two churches. And the missionary told him at the end, from what I understand, he told the pastor, Pastor, and what am I supposed to do with these other three towns? I appreciate what you've done, but what am I supposed to do with these other three towns? And the pastor said that what he told him was, well, I guess all we can do is leave it in the Lord's hands. If they're saved, they'll be there. I don't know what we're going to do with it. Folks, when you start studying the world, and we start seeing what the Lord's doing, there are so many ways in which God is working in hearts. Countries are opening up that's been closed. People, COVID itself has brought about some changes, and it's opened up doors. I know it's closed others, but there is opportunity. The U.S. is quickly becoming the country with the largest Latin group of the world. Here within this country, the doors that are opening up are great. What we need is help. We need people. And I believe that, sadly, in many of the places where the people are, it's good churches like this. And I know we can't all go. I know we can't all get up and say, I'll go further. But I believe more should be doing it than are doing it. I believe more of us can do more to impact our society here. I appreciate what Maranatha's always done. I've been coming in out of Maranatha now for 22 years. It's been a special place to us. And I know the zeal for missions that exist in this church. Evidence is on the wall back there too. But folks, can we do more? Can we pray more? Can we shed a tear a little more often? When's the last time you shed a tear for a soul? You know, sometimes we can be so silly, we'll cry over a basketball game or a football game. We'll cry over a cake that caved in the oven. We'll cry over a pet that's got an ingrown toenail. We'll cry over a joke. I mean, is it just me? Is it just a circle I run in? I don't know. You know, sometimes we are so finicky. We get broken for some of the dumbest things. And yet, the things that should break us as believers is the army of Christ. So many times, it doesn't do much to us anymore. Have we gotten used to the need? Have we not seen past what we've grown accustomed to? The needs out there. I would encourage you today to do more where God has placed you. We appreciate for what you do for us. We appreciate you standing with us. And the day is, we do go out, as we walk back into another week, as we drive amongst people, even among Shelby with all the Baptist churches, my kids this last few months have said, another church? Not that we're going to visit, but, you know, driving down the road, and they're like, how many churches does this town have? Well, not just Shelby. You know, we're in the Bible Belt, and they've been seeing it. It's everywhere. I said, well, not all of them are good. And we understand that. But the honest truth is you've been blessed in so many ways. Let's never forget it. Let's continue to reach out with the gospel, with the good news and responsibility God has given us. Folks, I don't know what time you usually get out, but I'm probably pretty sure I went past your time. I appreciate Pastor not jumping up and saying nothing. I appreciate your willingness to be able to be in church tonight. We thank you for your prayers. If you'd ever want to come visit us, we would love to have you. Send Pastor to preach for us. He would be a huge blessing to our people. Mexico, if you walked in, you had to have a translator anywhere you went. Aruba, 80% of our people could understand you just by speaking English, even with a broken English, but they will understand you. If we take this building, we're going to need a construction team. We're going to need teams to come and help with VBS, a camp. You know, we're going to need evangelism activities. If there's a young person, a young couple that says, hey, we'd like to come in and maybe consider, you can come into Aruba 3 months, no questions asked, just with your passport, no visa. 3 months. Will you consider a 3-month mission trip? We'll set up an apartment over that building, let you set up and be the person on the spot. I'm serious about it. I'll do everything I can. I'll bend over backwards to make it happen on my end. We need help. Pastor, thank you for letting us be here. Sorry for abusing of the time tonight, but we appreciate the way you all have letting us be here.